steps 6 and 7, those were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So, BJ, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Good evening, everybody. My name is TJ, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, TJ.
So, so we've gone through steps 4 and 5. Thanks. My brain sometimes lags far behind. And you know, after. After I was speaking last week, I was kind of laying in bed this morning and I had all these thoughts about how I was going to start today, and I'd love to tell you what that was, but I can't remember. But I will tell you this, that I don't know about any of you, but my disease is alive and well inside of me. And my first thought today was, that I remembered anyway, was, these people, they don't believe anything you're saying. You shouldn't go. And honestly, I went, wow, really? You're still thinking about things like that? And the answer is, yes, I am. So deep down inside, there still must be part of that disease inside of me. Now, the reason I bring this up is twofold. A, we're getting close to the middle of the steps. And it just reminds me over and over and over again how important these steps are for me in my life. And if I could remember what the other thing was, I'd tell you what it was. But. So, one of the things about the steps are we gain a lot of self-awareness. And funny thing about self-awareness, sometimes getting self-awareness is painful. We've heard it said that the truth will set you free. However, at first, it will most likely make you miserable. And that's the truth, especially when we start talking about steps 6 and 7. All the changes that come about through God working in our lives is by our consent and our permission. All the growth that happens through our will and our consent. We have to make a decision. If you remember, we did that back in step 3. We have to become willing and ready, and we can see it building to a point of change. Step 6 and 7 are the principle of the program. If we look back at our steps and see how they work, we can see that we took them to give us the ability to take 6 and 7, where the changes can really begin. In step 1, we saw the problem. In step 2, we saw the solution. And in steps 3, we made a decision. And in step 4, we had to go to work to identify the things that blocked us. In step 5, we re-examined those blocks, getting down to their exact nature, making sure they were fine-tuned. Now we're ready to start changing. So steps 1 through 5 have put us into position for steps 6 and 7, the changing process. Step 6 is about becoming willing to let go. After all, we've worked for years with these things in our lives that caused us problems. We've made them a part of our lives. We've worked at our character defects and built them into our personalities. Through the power of step four, we were able to see how damaging these character defects are. After discussing them further with someone else, we should now be willing to let go of them. But even if we are not willing to let go of them, the step covers that too, because we will pray for the willingness until it comes. Prayer is useful throughout the steps. So I spent so much of my time rounding out my character defects rather well, I think. In everything that I have done in my entire life kind of led up to this, but it created, I created who I was. Now, if you also remember, I also said, whatever you think you are, you become. And that's, and I had become that person, that selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and so on and so forth person, okay? And I worked really hard at all that. I didn't want to let that go. But we aren't ready to let go of some of these character defects or shortcomings or whatever else you choose to call them. Step six is about the willingness to let them go. Once we are willing, we ask God to remove them in step seven. We ask God to remove them in step seven. So steps six and seven are companion steps. They are not steps that we take one after the other, like the other steps. They're steps we take beside each other. That is, we may see our character defects gradually over time, and we will use step six and seven to see them. We will become willing to let go of them and ask God to remove them. Whatever you practice, if you've been practicing golf since the day you were born, you're probably a really good golfer. Or if you practice bowling, you're probably a pretty damn good bowler. Well, I practiced being a liar and a thief and a con artist and a selfish human being and a self-centered human being and a dishonest human being, and I was really good at it. I am a great liar. I am a spectacular liar, or at least I always thought so. Our personalities are nothing but a pattern of mental habits we've accumulated and practiced and made into a pattern. So each time that I, practiced those kinds of things, I got really good at them. I remember once I was in a little store, and I really wasn't much of a shoplifter, I guess. And I was in this little store in Girard called Buyer's Fair, and they had this little fishing area. And I thought, I would really like some new fishing lures. I didn't have any money, but I really wanted some new fishing lures. So I'm, looking at the new fishing lures, and I didn't really see anything I needed or wanted. But I had decided already that I was going to take something. So I did. I'm pretty sure it's still in my tackle box someplace. But I stole this, this 98-cent fishing lure, and never used it. Not once. Because I was too scared. I thought if I used it, it actually made this a real shoplifting here. If I didn't use it, maybe I wouldn't feel so guilty about it. Now, you can see the ridiculousness. Now that we've examined these things, these unproductive things in step four and five, they should be objectionable to us. just like me stealing that fishing lure, that's pretty objectionable. I mean, I looked at that and said, well, what are you doing? That's just ridiculous. That's the key word. They should be objectionable to us. We should now see that they are of no value to us. If you don't do steps 4 and 5, these things will not become objectionable to us, and we will have no reason to change. Once we see them as objectionable, we can become ready to let them go, and that's step 6. Step 7 then comes into play. If we want to change, we will begin to practice something different. We take the place of our defects and unproductive attitudes. We will change our personality by the use of that principle, the principle of change. Okay, so Kevin calls it contrary action, and I like that. You can't just wake up and decide you're going to change something. You have to replace it with something else. So step 6 is based on this truth. If you want to change, you don't do what you want to do. If you don't do what you want to do, you can slay the old idea with inaction. Okay? Let me reread that. Step 6 is based on this truth. If you want to change, you don't do what you want to do. If you want to do what you want to do, you can slay the old idea with inaction. The real problem is that most people cling to what they are, the real problem is that most people cling to what they are, even though they don't like it. It's painful, but at least they're familiar with it. They're not ready to give up on that for something better. I remember reading the book, A New Pair of Glasses. My wife asked me if she could have that book, and I said, yeah, if I knew where the heck it was, I'd give it to you. But I don't think it was ever mine. I think I borrowed it from somebody. But anyway, in The New Pair of Glasses, it talks about putting these glasses on. And when I came into the program, you know, I put this new pair of glasses on, and I saw the world completely different. God, everything was so bright, and you know, the flowers were nice, and the sky was beautiful, and the sun was shining, and isn't this great? And then I took the glasses off and threw them away, because I wasn't used to that. That was not familiar to me. What was familiar to me was that gray, icky world that I lived in. And I understood that, and that at least made sense to me. As we stop doing the things we want to do, we force ourselves to do things we don't want to do. As we force ourselves to do these things, we get the benefits and these new thought patterns. So it just stands to reason that nowhere in any of this does it make sense that we're going to continue to hang on to our old ideas. Remember the statement in the fifth chapter that says about our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. So, just as a quick going back into history, I forgot I was going to read this. No, not that one. Anyway, Bill had... Bill was writing the big book, and he wrote the first four chapters in the big book, and he came to chapter five, and he was trying to write chapter five for quite a while, a couple of weeks, I think, and it took him forever. So he really didn't know where he wanted to go with that, so he stopped, and he decided to ask for guidance. So he prayed for some guidance, and he wrote chapter 5 and the remainder of the steps in less than 30 minutes. I look at that and go, wow, that's incredible. So basically what he was saying to us is that, you know, he looked at the first four chapters as kind of working on steps 1, 2, and 3. And you can do that. You can sit back and you can go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, and you can do that for the rest of your life, and that's fine. Maybe you'll stay sober. I doubt it, but maybe. But it isn't until you get to chapter 5 that you actually see how people actually begin to stay sober. The 12 and 12 says that step 6 is where we separate the men from the boys. And boy, that's very true. And ladies, we're not discounting you either. You can just replace those words with the little girls from the women. This is where it gets hairy, to me anyway. And to me... there was this one guy that used to come into the program, and he would say that steps 10, 11, and 12 are the meat and the potatoes of the 12 steps. And I hate to disagree with him, but the meat and the potatoes are right here in steps 6 and 7. I think these are the most important steps that you can take. But you can't get to 6 and 7 without doing 1 through 5. Okay? So if you haven't done an inventory, and if you haven't given it to another human being, then you can't do 6 and 7. It's impossible. But I think these two steps are probably the real meat and potatoes of the AA program, or the AA 12 steps. I have these things all written down and highlighted. I just told you about Bill. Bill is thought to have said that the Oxford group's tenants had loopholes that alcoholics were jumping through. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'd have found a loophole in the 12 steps, I'd have flown through it, for God's sake. And I suppose if I'd have taken a look at the Oxford tenants, there was probably some loopholes in there that I'd have blown right on through. You know, every alcoholic I've ever met has tried to make changes. He's tried to control his drinking, but that didn't work. He's tried to quit drinking. Then in AA, he finds out his problem is not drinking. Did I just say that? He finds out in AA that his problem is not drinking. His problem is living. And I thought, wow, my problem is not that I have problems with drinking. My problems are that I have problems with living. He learns He has resentments, fears, guilt, and remorse. He accepts that. In AA, he learns that having those feelings isn't the exact nature of the problem. He has to go deeper. Finally, when he works steps 4 and 5, he puts his finger on the things he has been looking for all his life. His character defects. His character defects should become objectionable to him. With the insights from the process in step 4 and 5, he comes to see that the exact nature of his wrongs. For change to come about, these things have to become objectionable. Bill wrote, "Are we now ready to let God remove all the things which we have admitted are objectionable?" You know, human beings usually resist change. We won't make changes unless we understand that the change is vitally necessary. We can get used to using what we have, no matter how inadequate. Okay, so pain is a great motivator. I had some questionable eating habits about 9 years ago, and many people had said to me that my eating habits might be a little not healthy, and then I had a heart attack. Oh, now I know what you mean. Okay. It wasn't until after I had the heart attack that my eating habits may have become objectionable. Now they're objectionable. Now, 9 years later, they're not quite as objectionable as they used to be. You know? But the truth of it is, they should be objectionable. So if you're going to change, you have to replace them with something. So up until this point, we've all been living on self-will. So if you're going to make changes in your life, what happens is you know that dishonest person becomes honest. The selfish person becomes unselfish and generous. The self-seeking person becomes humble. The frightened person becomes courageous, and the inconsiderate person becomes considerate and kind. We use prayer to bring that change about. Now, if you recall, way back in step 3, we talked about the third step prayer, and I said to you, remember that the third step prayer does not have amen at the end of it, because it's not the end of the prayer. But the seventh step prayer does have an amen at the end of it, and the seventh step prayer is this: "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." That's from page 76 of the Big Book. If you put the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer together, you make one great big prayer. And that's the real prayer. Now, I don't know if that's really the truth. It's what I've been told. And to be honest with you, if you put them together, it really fits rather well. So I believe it. So I'm going to tell you that's exactly what it is for me. Maybe Kevin knows more about it than I do. I don't know. Now, having done an inventory, he has some authentic information. He can change his stock and trade. This is the thrilling part of the program. Now he has the tools to do something about it. Steps 6 and 7 are changing tools. I think the greatest obstacle is the fear of change. Everybody wants something new, but most people don't want to give up what's old, and they want to make sure they are right. But when we start something new, we don't know what lies ahead. We don't know whether we are going to be successful. The key to success with step 1 was willingness. The key to step 6 is also willingness. And the key to step 8 is going to be willingness. Willingness is a state of mind that allows us to believe. That was step 2. Allows us to decide, step 3. And allows us to act, step 4 through 10. We have to believe we are going to change. We have to decide to change, and we have to act to change. This is what we have to do. Nobody can do it for us. And our willingness is the key. So, willingness seems to be a big deal around here. And if you haven't had enough pain to grab hold of that willingness, go on back out and try it your way for a little bit. I'll guarantee you it won't work. I think I'm pretty good at making that guarantee. I think for right at the moment that's all I have, unless something else comes about. So thank you.
It's on. Thank you, TJ. So now we have time for questions and answers from anybody that has a question for our speaker. So if you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom, just go ahead and speak up when you have the opportunity. So who would like to get us started?
That's a beautiful thing.
Okay.
Thank you, TJ. I heard a lot tonight. Some of it's kind of baffling, confusing sometimes. So,
well, that's because I'm not really a very good teacher.
Oh. Well, I've never been a really good listener. I'm working on that. So, I know you talked about trading something for another. So with your when you sponsor somebody, many, many years ago, I got cancer, and I couldn't eat for a long time. So since I couldn't eat, I started smoking.
Makes perfectly good sense.
Yeah, that's, you know. And so I wonder sometimes, I never knew that there was anything wrong with that, even though I didn't like smoking, it was just something to do. So do you have sponsees that trade something for another and don't even realize what they're doing? Because I never thought about it till tonight when you're mentioning trading for another.
Well,
that's all great, thanks.
Actually, yes. I mean,
thank you.
Lots of people, as they go through the steps, will trade one addiction for another. You hear a lot of people will trade alcoholism for gambling or sex addiction or because we have such addictive personalities. I remember it wasn't all that long ago, you know, my wife said to me, well, first of all, you know, I was playing games on my phone or iPad or whatever it was. And, you know, and it started off innocently. You know, I spent 99 cents to get to the next level or whatever it was. And, well, that was pretty easy. So I spent another 99 cents to get to the next level. And next thing you know, the bill comes due at the end of the month for the credit card, and it's, you know, it's $100 or whatever. And now it's not a lot of money. I mean, I got the money. That's not a big deal. And my wife says, "What the hell are you doing?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And she says to me, "You know, you should call your sponsor about this." Excuse me? She says, "If you don't call your sponsor, I'm gonna." And I'm going like, "Wow, really?" And I had to take a look at it, and I didn't end up calling my sponsor, and I went, "You know, is this a problem?" And he said, "Well, you look at it, and you tell me if it's a problem." And the answer is, yeah. Yeah, if I stop working these steps, as I understand them, things like that are going to pop up all the time. And I'm going to replace one thing with something else. Somewhere in the reading, I read that God abhors a vacuum. So if you if you get rid of one thing in your life, no matter what it is, you know, if you decide, okay, we're going to quit smoking, okay, so you quit smoking, but you have to replace that with something else, something better, okay. Most people, you know, will go, "Well, I'll eat candy." And then they gain 15 pounds. You know, and you go, "Okay, well, I've gained 15 pounds. Now I'll ride my bike for a while." And they lose the 15 pounds, but now they're never home because they're always riding their bike. You know, so, it's sometimes a vicious cycle, but the truth of it is, all we're doing is really replacing one thing with another. One of the things I like most about the Alcoholics Anonymous is that what we're replacing alcoholism with is helping other people, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the biggest thing. If I stop helping other people, I'm going to be in some deep doo-doo. So that's one of the things you can look at and say, you know, this is what I've replaced a lot of my character defects with, is now I'm helping other people, whatever it is, if that answers your question.
Who else has a question for TJ? Anybody on Zoom have a question? I think Kevin's got like eight locked and loaded.
Somehow I knew you were going to have a question. Come on.
Thanks, TJ. Thanks for coming out. And 6 and 7, I think you're right. I mean, I agree with you as far as them being, you know, the meat and potatoes of this program. I was told that they were also called the teeter-totter steps, where if you're doing 6 and 7, the pendulum would swing to, like, you could do 8 and 9 and then 10, 11, and 12. But if you weren't doing 6 and 7, that you would slide back to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and so on. So that's where that came from. And I was told that when I replaced a defect, I had to replace it with a virtue. And so when you're working with people and you know, they go two steps sideways and another one sideways, and maybe you have a step forward, and a whole step back, and they're in kind of a rut cycle or whatever. What do you do when you observe this in them, and then how do you help them out of that that circle of going in circles and not moving forward?
Okay, usually, at least in my case, and what I usually try to do is to get people to do service work. Service work will put you back on track faster than anything. Even the Big Book even talks about working with another alcoholic is the fastest way to get out of your own head. Okay, and so I think service work is probably the biggest thing for me anyway, to get people back on the right track. And I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I had never heard it called the teeter-totter steps before, but I kind of like that, because you're right. You know, if you're not working six and seven, then you're going backwards. I've heard the term maintenance steps when you get to 10, 11, and 12. I don't think in this program that you can stand still. You're either moving forward or you're going backwards, one of the two. And so if you're not moving forward, especially after six and seven, you're on your way back downhill, and you're on your way to a drink. Now, it may take you a while to get there, but in my estimation, you're on your way to a drink. Maybe someone puts you, gets you to start doing some service work, or gets you to start helping other alcoholics and gets you back on the right track. And maybe they don't. But to me, service work is a big motivator to get you back on the right track.
Who else has a question?
Oh, there he goes again.
I waited my 15 seconds. So I think that's a great suggestion about service and getting the people to move. Where do you think prayer fits in that?
Well, as I stated numerous times in here, is that prayer goes along with everything. I mean, without prayer, you're in working these steps, you're lost. I'm sorry, you're just lost. If you're not waking up first thing in the morning and saying prayers, you're in trouble, I think. And especially when you look at the third and the seventh step prayer, if you're following along with that, you can't go wrong. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. So when you're working with somebody and you say, okay, so be of service, and they go, okay, they do something at a meeting, and you say, well, you know, what about prayer? And they go, I pray. I do the seventh step prayer. I do the third step prayer. What else you want me to do? Do you ever, like, help anybody out of that, you know, that kind of, like, rhetorical answers that, you know, we can spit out? Like, maybe suggest other prayers or other books or something that may push them in the direction that we'd like to see them go?
I have. I especially like the New Pair of Glasses book. But there's another one, and if I thought about it long enough, I would tell you what it is, but I think it's called The Bridge Across Forever. Is that what it is? And it's a great book to read, especially if you're having difficulties with relationships, okay? And not necessarily relationships with your significant other, but just even friendships, that kind of thing. So yeah, I have recommended that.
What was the name of that book again?
A Bridge Across Forever, I think is the name of it. Now ask me who the author is, not a clue. Don't remember. No, you're done. Two question minimum, or maximum.
It just came to me, sorry, you were talking about sometimes we can start sliding a little bit, don't even realize it. So when my sponsor tells me something and recognizes that maybe I'm not where I should be, dragging a little bit, I want to know, how do you take it when your wife tells you that as opposed to your sponsor?
I get pissed.
Because I get that too.
I get pissed right off the bat.
Oh.
I mean, I'll be honest, I don't like it. I don't know that any of us like to be told that you are messing up. And I use that because there's a child in this room. I'll not say the word I really want to say.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of it is, nobody likes to be told that. And the first thing that someone says, you're doing this, my first thought is, yeah, well, you got four fingers pointing right back at you too.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, 99% of the time, they're at least partially right. Now, sometimes they're partially wrong, too. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they're partially right. Most of the time, they're partially right. And that's something we have to take a look at.
My question to that, that you just said, do you ever tell her she's right?
What?
Answer that one.
That's my last question.
Yeah.
It's number three.
Take the fifth.
Yeah.
Get counsel.
Because she's in this room, I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that I may be incriminated.
Good job.
Any last questions?
Sure, my name's Trevor. I'm a caller.
Trevor.
How about timetable, TJ? I mean, here we are. We've done the fifth step, presumably, and gone back home and taken a look at things. How humble do we have to get before we can go on to the seventh step? You know, it says we're entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character, and then we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. So are we talking about? I mean, in my case, pretty short, but that doesn't mean that there weren't shortcomings that come back. After, not come back, but get discovered afterwards, I guess I'd say. But between the fifth step and starting on step eight, what are we talking about with people you're sponsoring?
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to tell you is the first 100, actually not the first 100 people, but I think I was always told that the first 100 people did the steps, all 12, in less than 100 days. Okay? So, if we're on step 6, and we're going to do this in less than 100 days, it's time to move on to step 8. And the reason is because, at least it's my belief, is that these character defects are never going away. Okay? They're never going away completely. We are always going to have them. They are going to pop up from time to time. If I ever got rid of all my character defects, there'd be this big halo behind me, and I wouldn't need to be going to meetings. But the truth of it is, that's not true. I am always going to have my character defects. They will always be with me. I spent a lifetime creating them. They're not going away right away. The key to step six is to become willing, and the key to step seven is to ask, humbly ask. So they're always going to be here. When they pop up, I have to humbly ask again, which comes about kind of what you were talking about. Does your significant other point these things out to you? Yes. And do I like it? No, of course not. But I have to go back and humbly ask again to have these defects of character removed. Does that make sense to everybody?
All right.
No, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, TJ.